you. We could go on and on, but we'd like to leave some time for questions and comments and for conversation, to not sit in silence for the whole time, but to actually let ourselves hear each other. So we invite you to, if you have questions or reactions, to share them. And I'll bring the microphone to you.
I appreciated the richness you shared from your experiences within your own monthly meeting as well as your yearly meeting. And one of the things I heard was the transformation from individual witness to group witness, that you were struggling in each case in your monthly meeting as well as your yearly meeting with the things individuals want to do, and then there's also the issue of a group witness. And since I'm sure we are wrestling with that in Minneapolis, friends, speak about some of the tools that helped get to the point where you could make a statement as a whole whole monthly meeting as well as a whole yearly meeting.
So I think there are sort of two, for me, they feel like two traps that we can fall into in terms of our discernment and our witness. And I would say that one of them, and obviously all of these things can happen, but I think the trap is to think that that's the way it has to happen. One of those is what we call sort of like let a million flowers bloom, which is everybody will do their own thing and that'll be really beautiful and the Spirit will work that way. We won't try to get anybody else to do what we're doing. And of course that happens. We're each led, we're each given our own work to do, and that's how we live our lives in many ways. But that's not the only way it can happen, of course, we know. And the other trap, I think, is to say we all have to do this in lockstep. We all have to wear gray on Thursday, and that will be the one witness that will change something. But it doesn't often happen like that. As a matter of fact, I can't see an example in the history of Friends that it actually has happened that way. Though that myth exists. I know I've fallen into that trap of, oh, what are we all going to do together? Wouldn't it be wonderful if all Friends did this? But I think there's this vital middle ground, which is that what if one friend being faithful to the leading that is tested with the meeting were all of our work? What if the way that ministry works is that particular gifts are given to a particular friend to express them at a particular time for a certain period of time, and that all of our work is to help support and liberate that? And what if that wasn't putting one friend on a pedestal, because we're hearing that those gifts are given to the meeting, for the building up of the meeting, and for the work of the Spirit in the world? So I think there are the techniques that I think are really vital of, you know, for example, the work of an oversight committee, and many friends may have had this experience, but in my own experience, the way that works is that there's a group of friends that's appointed by our Committee on Ministry and Counsel, and they meet with me monthly in order for me to bring any issues that I'm struggling with, reports and endorsements of minutes that I'm returning to them, invitations for new travel or new things that have opened for me, whether it's in worship or prayer, or somebody has asked me to come and travel to a particular place or to do a particular thing, to bring all of that, to bring the hard stuff, to be vulnerable about it, to be willing to be taken in hand, as one other friend on my committee says, when that's needed. That's a beautiful and a vital time. We worship together, and then that committee reports every month to our Committee on Ministry and Counsel and says very briefly either things are going well or we need this from the meeting or something like that. Now that has moved a little bit since I didn't just have a committee for oversight of ministry, but being named a released friend of the meeting, what the meeting was saying in doing that was as the minute says, that the work that they're seeing me called to is the work of the meeting. And that doesn't mean that everybody does the work by any means. We're all called to different work. What it means is that in some sense it's our shared work, that I'm responsible for the work that I do to the whole meeting, and that the meeting is responsible for testing how they might be led to support that work. One way that has looked is that the meeting has done a series of fundraisers in order to support my travel costs. so there has been individual fundraising that has been done with friends who felt led to support me as a released friend financially, to support the basic expenses of my wife and my household, or the part of that that I can't contribute because I'm traveling and engaging in other work in the ministry. The meeting didn't take on that work. Friends in the meeting have done the work of inviting others to contribute. But what the meeting did do was it said, we will make sure that you are not prevented from traveling because of a lack of funds. And that was something that the meeting was clear to do. And I know other meetings have done different things in different cases. But these are really concrete, risky ways that the meeting has gotten involved. Messy ways. One of the ways that our meeting found to deal with that was through building a relationship with an organization called Good News Associates, which is a nonprofit founded by evangelical friends on the West Coast in order to support friends who are called to non-institutional ministries. And they're a nonprofit with a board who are supporting friends doing all kinds of different ministries, ministries of reconciliation, ministries of spiritual nurture, education, travel in the ministry, speaking, organizational consulting for friends' organizations and other churches. They were created to respond to that need. This is one of those signs of life, one of those structures that was created to help meetings deal with these issues. Because we know, my meeting knows, that getting involved in the finances can be messy and can cause some challenges. But that doesn't stop it from being possible. It just means we have to proceed carefully. And we have learned in every step of this process from friends in other meetings, from friends of who've been doing this for a generation more than we have, who were able to share some of that richness with us. I don't know if that's helpful.
I know that we are largely what we believe we are capable of being. That what we think about ourselves is the most significant thing about how we are in the world. And that's why we're in community with one another, is so that you can believe in me and what I'm capable of, and you can see what's possible in me and call it out, and that I can do the same thing for you, that I can see what's possible in you, what I can see God working in you and how God calls you forth, and name that, and that is one of the things that we as friends are familiar with, and that if we're going to have a living water, if we're going to have real life in the community, we have to ask ourselves to be different, not to settle for the everyday, the status quo, the disappointment we have with being less than we know we could be. And so what I hear and what Noah has to say is that we have so much more that we could be, and we depend on each other. We understand that part about community. Thank you.
I was really struck by what you said about Quakers being ideally suited to respond to the crisis times that we're living in, especially global warming. It's something I've thought about myself, so I was startled to hear that. And I really think there's something big in that. And I know this is a funny question, but I want to say, now what do we do? Where do we go?
So Robin has noticed an opportunity.
For more handouts.
One of the things that emerged, this is not necessarily an answer, but maybe it speaks into that in some way. One of the things that emerged from the World Conference of Friends in 1937 was the Friends World Committee for Consultation. One of the things that emerged from the World Conference in 2012 was a document called the Kabarak Call for Peace and Eco-Justice, which is the fruit, in part, of the FWCC-coordinated consultations on global change that have been happening over the last several years. One of the beautiful things about the conference was that we met in what were called thread groups that were drawing together many different themes and concerns that Friends were bringing to the World Conference, and we brought the fruits of that to the floor of the plenary of the conference. And the consultation that was bringing the fruits of the consultation on global change brought this minute, which the conference approved sending out with the epistle. And it reflects a shared sense among many of the Friends who were gathered that Friends were called much more deeply into witness, into nonviolent struggle and campaigning and witness for peace and eco-justice in the world, and to much deeper discernment about how we could do that in a way that was coordinated. I don't know if do we want to read it? Everyone has a copy to take home.
May be enough copies for everyone who wants one tonight. There's more up here. If you want another one, raise your hand. If you want more, it's available on the World Conference website, saltandlight2012.org. And maybe I'll just read the end. And I'm afraid I missed the beginning of what you were saying while I was passing things out. So did you talk about...
I described where it came from.
The consultation over a couple years?
Yes.
Great. So at the end, it talks about how are we called? We are called to see what love can do, to love our neighbor as ourselves, to aid the widow and orphan, to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable, to appeal to consciences and bind the wounds. We are called to teach our children right relationship, to live in harmony with each other and all living beings in the earth, waters, and sky of our Creator, who asks, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the world?" We are called to do justice to all and walk humbly with our God, to cooperate lovingly with all who share our hopes for the future of the earth. We are called to be patterns and examples in a 21st century campaign for peace and eco-justice, as difficult and decisive as the 18th and 19th century drive to abolish slavery. We dedicate ourselves to let the living waters flow through us, where we live, regionally, and in wider world fellowship. We dedicate ourselves to building the peace that passeth all understanding, to the repair of the world, opening our lives to the light to guide us in each small step.
So this is one document that has been distributed everywhere that the epistle from the World Conference has been distributed. It's one invitation for Friends to consider, and my hope is that any meetings that feel led to take this up might consider how in their own, as the call says, how in their own location and beyond Friends might respond to it. I know that they're in Philadelphia Yearly Meeting, there's a campaign, an organization called the Earthquaker Action Team, EQUATE, which has been involved in opposing mountaintop removal. They're leading a campaign of divestment from PNC Bank, which was a bank that was originally founded by Quakers and was a bank that a lot of Quaker money was invested in. And they've been organizing Friends to withdraw their funds from PNC because PNC Bank is deeply involved in funding mountaintop removal activities. So this is one thing. George Lakey, folks may be familiar with George Lakey, has been very involved in helping to organize that campaign, as well as have a number of Friends. I think Robin might know more about that, but so Friends who are interested, maybe Robin is to just transfer her membership to Philadelphia Yearly Meeting, so you know, there's a connection there.
Just barely.
Okay, well, that's an example of the way that those friends have been led to take that up. And I know that George was at a report back from the World Conference, and he took that up, and I know he was going to be carrying it and sharing it much more widely as a way of saying, this is what friends globally have felt, as the representatives in the World Conference have felt, had life. I do want to say one more thing, though, about what might be next, and I don't certainly claim to know what is next, but one thing that I feel really deeply is a vital part of what's next is that we be as healthy and in as good condition as a body as possible. Because in all of the people who are talking about global systems change are saying this, that it's about resilient communities. I know some friends here have been led to take up the transition town work to look at that. That's, if folks haven't seen the transition handbook, that's a wonderful resource on building resilient, local, sustainable communities and building concrete, creative responses to help communities not prevent global climate change, but be prepared to cope with the change that's already happening. I think whether it's global climate change or the other changes we're facing, friends being resilient as a body and being healthy as a body is really vital. And what I mean by that is, are there conflicts in our meetings that are keeping us from being channels for love? Are there systems and committees that are just stuck where there could be newness and change in love that we could bring? We are paralyzed so often by our conflicts, aren't we? These things just go on for years. There's an understanding that the conservative friends have held on to, that one of the ways the Spirit works through our communities is by giving all the gifts that the community needs. And that if the community feels a lack, whether it's a lack of nourishing vocal ministry in meeting for worship, whether it's a lack of the pastoral care gifts that are needed, whatever it is, there's that trust that those gifts are given in the community and that our work is to help them be more free. So asking how we can nurture and support those gifts and trusting that we'll be given what we need. It's a leap of faith, and it doesn't fit with our mindset. It's a profoundly countercultural idea, but it's one that has been alive in our tradition for a long, long time. And what a wonderful invitation to how we could all come alive together, how we could all be celebrated for the gifts that we bring in our communities. So it feels to me like there are those spiritual muscles that I know are present that have atrophied, right? Like, how many friends do we know who have been released for travel in the ministry? It used to be that there were a lot more friends who were released for travel in the ministry. What if we move to a place of ministry as expectation rather than ministry as exception, where we believed that friends of all ages might be called into some kind of ministry active in the life of the community, that it's not just friends who are retired or friends who have independent resources or friends who are able to go between college and having to pay off their student loans, or some few special cases where there's a special moment that allows somebody to do something as I've had the opportunity to do for the last few years. But what if we didn't have to explain what that was, because we just assumed that in every meeting those gifts were given and those friends could be liberated for that service, because we knew how to do it. We knew both how to encourage them and how to challenge them and hold them accountable. That feels like a really vital part. I'm sorry for going on, but that feels like a really vital part of what could come next for us as friends. Getting over spiritual jealousy, where we don't want to put anybody up above everyone else, because that's not what we're doing. We're helping all of the gifts that are given in our community be freed for the good of everyone and for a blessing in the world. It's about helping encourage the life among all of us, not getting caught up in some people being special and some people being not. We're all beautiful and special and gifted. The question is helping discover and free those gifts.
Yeah, I can feel my anxiety rising as I hear that there are so many things that we could do in our meeting, and to stay away from the idea that we should do, but to try to find a way to sense the calling
that, and I guess I'm wondering if it's true that it would appear that each meeting, as each individual, has a calling to act in a way that is unique to not only the meeting, but the corporate body of that meeting. So I guess I'm wondering, instead of this, that one scenario where you talked about, well, let's run do the eco thing, or let's go start a school for young Quakers, because as you look around, we need a few young Quakers. So maybe if we did the program with, an internship or something. That's what I find my mind spinning around all the things that we could do. And I guess I'm asking, and probably thinking it might be true, that there probably, as you had a jubilee, maybe there needs to be an intentional time in every meeting to really allow for some, to come in with this abundance idea, but then allow for that to bubble or to seed or to grow before the action starts to happen. I'm asking, is that probably what you're seeing, or?
I would say absolutely. And forgive me if I appear to be suggesting that everybody should do all these things right now. I think there's what I'm hoping to encourage is just that we are open to that possibility, and that we trust that this is a moment in which that could happen. And it feels like I think, of course, the Spirit is always active and available. But it does feel in a lot of ways like this is an important time for all of us, regardless of where we are in terms of our age, in terms of our journey. I mean, it's not a small thing that for the first time in a generation, both Friends General Conference and Friends United Meeting are turning their attention to how the growth of new monthly meetings in North America could be nourished and fostered. That's a pretty powerful thing, and it's happening at the same time. It's not something that we should just ignore. There's an invitation for all of us, regardless of our age, regardless of how long we've been involved with the Religious Society of Friends, regardless of where we live in the country. There's a lot that's breaking through in this time, and I think it does. There is that invitation for us to really be open to what could happen, trusting that those gifts could be there, and then really listening deeply and authentically for what is ours. Not what is my idea, but what is ours in our meeting, and knowing that that grows from within the meeting, not from somebody bringing a project.
Thank you. And Noah, thank you for your guidance tonight. I want to go back to your opening invitation when we were invited to consider images or activities that speak to living waters for each of us. And what came to me at that moment was the vision or the image of an oasis. An oasis, typical, rising up out of the desert, the living waters coming up through the sands, bubbling to the surface, providing sustenance and living waters to all who pass by. But from that oasis, I looked up, and it was an oasis at the foot of a Tower of Babel. And so the biblical imagery of the Tower of Babel, and I thought, how fitting. We live in a media age of Babel. We live where we are surrounded by electronic chatter and crossfired. There aren't conversations. They're just blasts back and forth of people spouting from their mouth and from their head. And this Tower of Babel obliterates and overshadows the oasis that is bubbling at its foot. And so I'd like to address, out of this vision, who we are as Quakers and what we bring to this world of Babel.
and the lack of dialogue and the lack of depth that within the human spirit and the living waters within each of us can rise to the surface in any encounter, in any place or relationship that we're in. Do not underestimate the power of our worshiping community. When I tell people I'm a Quaker, all of a sudden they get this look in their eye. Oh, I've heard of Quakers. What does that mean? What do you do? What sets you apart? There's a curiosity there. And to me, that's an opening to witness in a very simple way, because all I have to do is to describe how I am and who I'm with and what we do. We sit in silence every first day. Oh, excuse me, that's Sunday. We sit in silence and we listen to one another. You should see their eyes light up. You mean you're quiet and no one's singing? There's not a band playing? There isn't that raucous, caucus, you know, distraction from worship? No. We sit in silence. And then we speak out of the silence as we are led. Well, how do you make decisions? Well, it's called clearness. We have a clearness committee. And it's available to you on an individual basis. You just gather some friends and you pose a question that you're wrestling with in your life and you ask for their help. And they listen to you. And they make suggestions. And you think about those. And you meet with them again if you need to. It's a simple process, but it's one that is lost in this world of Babel. How does your group make decisions? Well, it's called meeting for worship with attention to business. Huh? Yeah, we start out our business meeting with silence and prayer. And we consider, who are we in this community, and what are our gifts, and how can we combine them to speak to a condition of this planet, a condition of our community, in our own simple, quiet way. Powerful. Totally powerful. And that's where I draw my strength. And that's what allows me to not grow anxious, to not be overwhelmed by the cacophony of media sound, of the political screaming that hits us every day if we don't gird ourselves in silence and in worship and in fellowship as Quakers.
Zach White, thank you, Noah, for telling your stories of that, that image of the millions of flowers blooming and the everybody do one thing. The past few years been part of living out one version of that story here in the Minneapolis Friends meeting, of going through a series of workshops on racism, and from that a group of us getting together to try to carry that forward, and then the group coming to the meeting and saying, everybody, let's do this thing, and sort of learning about the dance of applying pressure to try to get everybody to do something, and the disappointment and the dance of that. And thanks for sharing that story, because it's nice to see it happen in other ways or hear that echo. And the sticking with it piece, because I've since stepped back from that group and feeling very weary, but I'm still here and still engaged and ear irritated. You know, I saw the flip chart with the markers and think, oh, gee. And yet, you know, the love for each of you, the mix of irritation and love, and the walking together and the learning and the thirst for something. And I don't know what it is, but I know I find little bits and pieces of it each time I come. And and I just wanted to at least acknowledge that piece of the story lived out here in this meeting. And I know others have shared in bits and pieces of that story. I'm on a little bit of jubilee myself, but open to whatever comes from that.
There's a friend, another friend in New England, who talks about our meetings as rock tumblers. Says we rub up against each other and we rub off the rough edges, and we all get more smooth and more beautiful. There's an image, in Traverse City, we visited the Friends of the Light, which is an amazing gathering of friends, faithfully living out their expression of Quakerism in this time. And down in the basement of this wonderful old meeting house that the Friends of the Light use is a little bathroom with a kind of a low ceiling. You have to go in up some stairs, and for somebody as tall as me, it's kind of an uncomfortable thing. But I went into this little bathroom, and I found that they had this wonderful thing on the toilet, if you'll bear with me for just a moment. And it says, hold the handle down for the full flush. All will work best. All will feel good. So, living water, right? I am always reminded that sometimes the somebody told me that the motto of the United States Paleontological Society is, people who know Latin are going to correct me, frango ut pate faciam, which means I break in order to reveal. Sometimes the purpose of our leadings are not at all what we think they are. I know that was my experience in work with the people of Iraq, that I was part of an effort that was providing medical care and advocacy for Iraqis, and I was transformed in that work. But it was coming to the limits of my own journey, coming to the place where I had to ask for help, where I had to come to other friends and was in some pretty rough places, that was where the love really flowed in. And it doesn't say that the work that leads us together, that work addressing issues of racism, whatever concern we're bringing, is not vital as well. But sometimes the frustration and the challenges, and of course I don't know the experience of friends with this, sometimes the way that we struggle with one another in relationship and stick with each other is where the living water is found and is where we're changed. So holding the handle down for the full flush, I just really want to encourage folks, you know, what a ride.
I don't know quite how to say this, but I've been a friend for a long, long time. And I have seen the meeting go through endless cycles of beating ourselves over the head about various causes that we should engage in as a group. And we have successfully done this from time to time. But a lot of the time, we are busy living our lives. And I remember one time we took sort of a survey of the whole meeting to find out what they did, what individuals did. And it was amazing what people were doing in their individual lives to live their lives as they hoped to be living it as Quakers. And occasionally, almost by accident, we found ourselves doing something together. Like when we suddenly found ourselves becoming delegates to the Democratic Convention without having consulted each other ahead of time. And I think when we think in terms of released friends, I think there certainly is a role for released friends like Noah. That's wonderful. But a lot of us have to earn a living in order to pay for released friends. And a lot of us are earning a living by doing something really important. Others are doing it in their spare time. And I think that one thing we need to say to each other is, we support you. You're doing a great job. And let's not beat each other over the head because we're not accomplishing anything.
Barbara spoke perhaps part of what I was thinking, but I want to add that the living water is not only among Quakers. So there's this tension between the communities of which we are a part, my Muslim colleagues and students, and I share living water too. And to I find the nurture in the Quaker meeting and in the Friends tradition, but I want to speak or guard against language that makes it sound somehow like we're the guardians of the well. We are one source, and it suits me and many of us well to return to this method of finding the water, but we also merge with other methods and other groups that also have the water.
So, God is not the God of the Quakers, or rather, God is the God of the Quakers, and that love and life that we encounter in our journeys is available and open to everyone, and people find that love in different ways, of course. I think the part that is on my heart is how we as a body steward this particular expression and this particular path that we've been given. And of course, the way that the Spirit moves, the way that love moves, is much messier than that. But I think the question is how, as the Religious Society of Friends, as this 350-year and more movement, how are we faithful today? And how can this particular expression of divine love and life be most faithfully tended? How can that be as full as it can be today? Not how can we be everything to everyone, but how can we just be humble and trust what we've been given and help live into that? Thank you.
As you were talking, Noah, I loved what you said about blessed are those who know their needs. And when Lynn started talking about if someone asked me why I was here, it'd be that I'm trying to, as you know the quote, live simply so that others may simply live. And when you talk about Babel, I think what I'm seeing here and what Darlene and I, being relatively new to this group, have found, the biblical phrase that came to me was, see how they love one another. And I think if that and the living simply were our only mission, it'd be one that all of you here are doing very well, and that I'm trying to live simply, cheerfully, and making little strides.
Some others have touched on this, but it continues to weigh on me and troubles me. This question that sometimes emerges among us friends about what is the unique position that, or the unique something or other that we can provide that is for us to bear witness to or bring forward. And I'm, you know, this is somewhat scary for me to say, and I appreciate that others have made reference to it. I don't know if, I think I might be wanting to lift up a different side of the many-sided rock. I fear that in some ways we as friends are socializing one another to believe that we somehow are exceptional. And there is a truth in that, and there's something very ordinary about who we are and how we are, and that is shared among many peoples of many faiths. Especially when we find something to bear outward witness in small and large groups and small and large ways, and somehow we say, this is a time for us to be proud to be friends. And there's this big part of me that says, no, this is a time for us to be humble that we are friends, that God is working through us, and this is a time for us to take off our sandals or fall to our knees or remove our hats. And, you know, I'm a friend because this is the best way that God is working through me right now. But in my work and coming to know people of other faith, I just am so concerned about what message are we sending to one another when we say, you know, we're uniquely gifted for XYZ because we're friends? And I just... There's a walk of humility in this way, too, and we sometimes miss opportunities to set that example and be that pattern as well.
There's a vital difference between, to me, and this is just my own struggling and searching with this, between an invitation and an identity. That I think I grew up believing that peace, simplicity, equality, integrity were who we were as friends. That these were what we believed, that they were our faith, that they were what defined us. And that because I believed those things, I was a Quaker. That's what I learned as a kid. And then I discovered this language, that the testimonies, as they were articulated in the 20th century, were a way that friends understood an outward sign of an inward transformation. Not that that was what we believed, and that that made us who we were, but that as we grew in our spiritual journey and as we were faithful, we might know that people were having an authentic spiritual experience of transformation if the shape of their lives began to reflect those words or those understandings. I grew up in a greenhouse a really beautiful greenhouse with this incredible glass dome above us, with the beautiful language that we use to describe our journey as Quakers. Leadings, ministry, clearness. And I had no idea what it meant because I hadn't felt the reality of that authentic experience. And I spent all this time jumping around, trying to reach that, trying to pretend that that was real, trying to keep from being violent in school, in difficult situations growing up in school, because I just thought something was supposed to be different because I was a Quaker. Something inside me was supposed to be different because that Quakers believed in peace. Rather than coming from a place of learning to sink down and to ask for something different to happen, to ask to be given the strength that something different could happen, and to be honest and real and vulnerable and authentic about where I was. And then somewhere along the line, and obviously I still do that in so many ways, but I found this scary sort of understanding that our work as friends is, yeah, we have these amazing lives, and some of them are sitting at meeting next to us. We have these amazing lives that speak about that transformation. But our work is not to jump up and down and try to reach that and to say that's who we are up there, even if we don't live it, even if we're awful to each other, or if people looking at us wouldn't say, in the times when it's been true of me, people wouldn't say, see how they love one another, they'd say, wow, that guy's really a jerk right now. Or that person is no different than anyone else. I hope people don't say I'm different than anyone else, but I hope sometimes that I can be a channel of love. And if I am, if each of us is, I hope that's because we're available in that moment to be open and to let love move through us. And so instead of jumping around trying to reach that greenhouse, maybe our work is just to look down at the ground and see that tender plant that is our authentic experience growing in our heart, and to turn our attention toward that and let ourselves be wherever we authentically are and attend to that and bring that into worship. Lean into the yes of that. That's the only thing that I've found that works, to grow into some place where I can feel those things more true, just a little bit more true in my life. Thank you, friend, for the reminder and the invitation to humility.
Thank you all for sharing of your experience, for coming to hear some of experiences from Noah's experience in many places, and to see how we are all part of a global conversation among friends about how we are called to be salt and light in the world, how we are letting the living water flow through us. And I hope that you will find openings in your local community to welcome the traveling ministers who come to you, and to send the traveling ministers who come forth among you. It's just past our 9 o'clock time. So I just want to say thank you again to the friends who did so much work to make this evening possible, to Amy McAdams, to Connie, to Cynthia and Connie, to Liz and Raquel for hosting us, and all of you who brought the lovely refreshments for the potluck. Thank you for coming.